Mother, man.
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal Mayhem!
This is Tucker.
And this is Shannon from the Black Crypt Podcast. And you're listening to Murder Metal Mayhem!
Fuck yeah. What's up, Chris?
What is going on, Pete?
Fucking A, man. Doing that Tuesday thing. Great to welcome you back.
Yeah, back in the house.
To Horns High, man. It's been a little while. You were on a special assignment. Yeah. It was very weird with you not being here.
I bet it was.
It's kind of hard to do this, like looking at a blank wall, you know? Right.
When you're normally looking at somebody else, hey.
Right. You remember when we started doing these up in the bedroom?
Yeah, we were like
facing each other because of the way we had it set up, which was really awkward. But nonetheless, it's good to have you back, dude. You been?
I've been good, other than the county decided to take me on a one-month-long vacation.
Is that what it was? I told everybody you were on special assignment.
I was going deep undercover within this in the judicial system.
Any podcast-worthy events that happened?
Oh, nothing major, really.
Pretty mundane.
It was jail.
Yeah.
It was boring as fuck.
Well, I did get to come visit you, but it was weird because I figured I was going to be like looking at you across from a table.
Yeah, no, all video visit.
And I got there and I'm like looking at a screen. It was just really weird. I guess I just never visited anybody in jail before.
Yeah.
So you were my first visiting experience.
Yeah, first jail visit. Nice.
But it was weird with you not being here. So it is really good that you're back. And these last 2 weeks, you were gone a month, but the last 2 weeks did a couple bonus episodes with Thanksgiving. And also Jenny had some surgery scheduled. It's a long story why they didn't do it. But nonetheless, we had 2 weeks where we wanted to put in some bonus stuff. And so the first week, the Thanksgiving week, we did the Brutal Rewind on Carla Faye Tucker.
Shit, yeah.
That was the one I did with Tex while you were gone.
A couple of them damn things. I wish I was not.
I know. It was really tough to do this stuff because man, this sucks.
It's got to happen, though.
And we had the schedule, and it really worked out because we already had some guests
lined up
that were going to be here anyway.
Exactly, man.
So it really worked out okay. I am sorry, though, that you got to miss Randy.
Dude, I really wish Randy, if you're listening, brother, I wish I would have seen that shit. My niece was even telling me about that shit, dude.
Yeah, Randy from funny. Blood Feud passed out in Horns High, fucking in the gray room, slumped over the carpet in there.
That's fucking hilarious.
It was fantastic. But Blood Feud was fun when we had him in here. But the Brutal Rewind did really well. We had a lot of listens to that, about 1,000 right now, which is cool.
Oh, yeah.
And then also we released a full interview that I did with Tony Campagna of Spellbound Effects and Art, which is really cool.
Making
Tony is
nasty shit, dude.
Yeah, very fucking nasty. Tony's a great dude. Totally our kind of guy. Right. Great sense of humor. Sick as fuck. Metalhead. All about it. And then last week, we did the full Harold Schechter interview, which was really cool. It was about 40-something minutes long. And that got quite a few listens. And then the big one, Christopher St. Booth of fucking Spook TV on the Sci-Fi Channel. We met him, of course, at the Dark History Con.
Awesome talking to him about the exorcisms and shit while we was there. And shit was awesome, man.
Yeah, Christopher is a great guy. And so that interview got a lot of listens. So if you missed these, go back and check it out because there's quite a few good morsels in there. I did two each week, bonus stuff, just to keep things going keep you guys listening. And all this stuff is up at MurderMetalMayhem.com or the podcast player of your choice. So go listen to those if you would.
Go listen, fuckers.
That's right.
Don't go to jail because you don't get to listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I was going to say, that would definitely be a bummer, you know. Tonight we're going to be throwing down with a feature on what are some are saying is the most prolific. They use that word a lot with serial killers.
Yeah, but this guy, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's there.
Yeah, Samuel Little. Some of you may not be familiar with him. He is one sick son of a bitch. Claims to have killed 93 women, dude. That's fucking crazy. Yeah, he has a very, very disturbing story. Another drifter killer.
Yep.
You know how we are about the drifter killers, man.
Mommy issues, all that.
Yeah, and spanning the whole country, killing lots of prostitute, drug addicts. So we're going to dig into that story as we got Chris here back in the saddle with this one. So really fucking ready. I've been excited about this all day, so this is cool, man.
Right? I'm back home, man.
That's right.
It fucking feels
right. Does the studio look the same?
It looks fucking pretty awesome.
I vacuumed for you even. I put in a new air freshener. I rolled out the red carpet.
You've been
man.
Farting in here while I'm in jail. He's just like sitting here recording shit, just breaking them off. Like, fuck it.
It got some new stuff in here. I don't know. Were you in here when I had that?
Yeah, I remember when you got that. Yeah.
Okay. And then the Gacy poster.
Shit. Yeah, dude. Fucking A, man.
And then, of course, the exorcism kit from Christopher that we bought at the Dark History Con.
Yeah.
So, got some cool exorcism. Shit. Got some cool stuff in here, as always. And, of course, soon to come will be our lamp from Tony. Yes. And we're going to get to that here in a little bit. Now, speaking of drifter killers, man, that Netflix series everybody's talking about, The Confession Killer, is a good one. It's about Henry Lee Lucas, which, of course, we know all about him, and the controversy surrounding his confessions. It's definitely worthy of a brutal rewind, dude, because there's a lot of stuff in there I had no idea.
Yeah, you sent me the link. I'm definitely going to check that out. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, it's well worth it if you guys haven't watched it yet. It's on Netflix, The Confession Killer. It's like a five or six parter on Henry Lee Lucas and his confessions and how they were, well, a lot of people think, totally bogus. So check it out. Also, we got a new killer cage match tonight, thanks to Stacy Dudley, Barb Martin, and Tony Campagna, our buddy, got in on this, too. We got Osama bin Laden, dude, going up against who, man?
Vlad the Impaler. I already feel like it's one-sided.
Yeah, I do, too. I mean, we've talked about this before. Who the fuck could go up against Vlad the Impaler and
Jesus
win?
Jesus Christ.
I mean, that motherfucker is just a badass. So they're going to fight to the death in the cage. You got the goat herder fighting the badass Impaler King. So
Dracula
should be fucking wicked. They got two objects and a variable. The variable is pretty funny. So I think you guys will dig it. So thanks to the listeners for supplying those random numbers for us. Now, CK, he is fucking itching, dude. He was in the hospital again, had a high temperature.
Yeah, you told me that the other day. That
had to do
sucked.
An infusion, and then he was in the hospital again and had an infection, and he's home now, but he's ready. Fucking and we're going to try something different with CK this time, which we'll talk about when he gets on. So we'll explain to the listeners what is different about what they're going to hear. This time, though, he's going to do one. It's a good one. The mighty fucking Motorhead, man. That should be really cool.
Fuck yeah.
Little Lemmy. Ace of Spades.
Lemmy with his Cocoa Puffs.
So it's going to be a good one for CK. He's definitely the man for that job. Definitely going to be soaked in whiskey and dirty as fuck.
Jack Daniels and cigarettes, baby.
That's right. Ready for that shit. So it should be really good. Also, we did an interview with our buddies in the Black Crypt podcast. You heard them in the beginning of the show. We did an interview with them at the Dark History and Horror Convention in October, and we'll play the whole thing for you. It's like 7 minutes long. Fucking cool guys, man.
Those guys are fucking awesome as shit, dude.
And two of them are fucking...
I hope they're not.
No, two of them are funeral home director.
Right, yeah, I knew that. Yeah, I remember that.
So that's a pretty morbid occupation and perfect for a podcast about true crime and murder and ghosts and all kinds of shit.
Check out their podcast.
So, yeah,
History,
go check
man.
Them out.
For real.
Yeah, they're really, really good.
They talk about lots of horror stuff.
Yep, and they drink, too, while they do it.
Booze and booze.
That's right. So yeah, we're going to do that interview. We'll play that for you in the Mayhem segment of the show. Also, huge fucking thanks. Horns way the fuck up. Spellbound Effects and art.com. Tony Campagna is the fucking man.
Check his shit out.
He's the one that did the amazing forearm with Murder Metal Mayhem carved into it. Everybody loves that fucking thing. He's got more stuff coming our way to decorate the studio, and we're going to have a little bit more of that later, but it's going to be fucking amazing. I can't wait. It'll be here on Thursday, dude, so I'm really psyched.
I can't wait to see that shit, dude. It's going to be right there.
I know. It's going to be right like in the middle of the table. I'm going to be
watched when we record from now on by dead people.
Right? Definitely. The full interview with Tony was posted during the week of Thanksgiving, as I mentioned, so definitely go check that out. Bands, I cannot stress upon you enough, go listen to that interview, because
there's a contest up in there.
There's a contest with a prize. I think it's still out there. If you could find something on Tony's website at spellboundeffectsandart.com that is related to a serial killer that we all know, and they're the first one to email him that answer, you will win a severed arm just like the one we got. With your band fucking carved in that shit. Yeah.
So or the logo, if you want. How nasty would that be, dude?
Sick as hell. He sells those things for a couple $100. So this is an amazing contest. So go to spellboundeffectsandart.com. Look for the clue about a serial killer that we all know. And email Tony. And if you're the first one to do it, you'll get the forearm. So, and he does have some other prizes too for the runner-up. Yeah, so
second place,
go check it out and email him. So if you listen to the interview, it's all explained there, the email address, everything. It's not that long of an interview either. It's like 25, 30 minutes maybe. But yeah, it's really good too.
Fucking awesome too, because the dude's a fucking killer guy.
He is. He's awesome. Now tonight, Chris, we got the guys from Pogo Party Fun, last minute ad for the show.
This whole thing's a clown show.
Speaking of Pogo, how about that fucking, man, I'm looking at that fucking poster for that new Borowski movie.
Fucking, yeah, the John Wayne Gacy murders.
Yeah, that's going to be fucking sick. And we also have an announcement about Gacy that we'll have later on in the show. We got lots of bombs going to be dropped tonight. So it's going to be fucking cool, man. So thanks to everybody listening. You guys, we really appreciate it. We keep seeing the numbers rolling in. New cities all over the world. It's crazy. Chicago is still number one, but Bloomington is catching up. And Danbury's right behind it. So it's almost a three-way tie.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And we keep seeing new cities on the list. So thank you guys. Really, we appreciate it. And keep on spreading word.
Thanks for all of it. Everybody supporting, even though the king was gone.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it was really weird doing this without you, man.
I'm just kidding.
Well, we got a lot on our plate tonight. Time to hit that road once again, doing some drifter killing. So
yes, let's get our fucking murder on. Curse of the legions of death! Curse of the legions of death! Curse of the legions of death!
Fucking Crysix, man.
Killing it.
Doing some cover songs on this latest album they just came out with. That was Testament, Curse of the Legions of Death. Love that fucking song, and I love the way they do it.
Yeah, fucking, they killed it, dude.
Yeah, they do Toxic Waltz. They do some violence. They do some good shit on there, man.
I'm pretty sure Toxic Waltz is the one that I seen the video for.
It's killer. I haven't seen the video. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, it's fucking badass.
So I love Crysix. So, yeah, that's some good stuff there. Of course, we're talking about Samuel Little here in the murder segment.
Who really wasn't so little, honestly.
He wasn't, man. He was a pretty bad motherfucker. American serial killer, currently in prison in Los Angeles after being convicted of killing three women in California from 87 to 89 and a woman in Texas in 1994, and we already know, dude, you don't want to fuck with Texas, man.
No, hell no, because they will kill you.
They will kill He's
you.
Lucky California got a hold of him
before
first.
Before Texas did? Yeah, for real, because he'd probably be dead already.
Probably. I mean, he's fucking or cool. On his way.
Yeah, he's on well on his way.
Yeah.
Like, legit.
Yeah, he's old.
Yeah, he's old as fuck.
Now, he confessed to killing 93 women in 14 different states during a 35-year period. Now,
I thought it was 19 states.
I think he had arrests in 19 states, I think.
Maybe that's what it was.
Now, we were just talking about Henry Lee Lucas earlier and how a lot of his confessions were bogus. They've already confirmed 60 of these.
Like confirmation, like, oh, holy fuck, right. Man.
So they are still investigating because he hasn't been caught for that long. It's been a little over a year.
Right.
So, I mean, this is pretty fresh. They're still investigating, so hard to really know for sure. And this guy's definitely one sick motherfucker. So,
and they basically got him kind of the same way they got the Golden State Killer.
Yes, with the DNA and stuff. Shit. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how a lot of these guys are going to start getting caught. Right.
And like, oh, we got you now, motherfucker.
That's right. Especially when they were doing this shit in the 70s and early 80s when there wasn't DNA, but now they can. Kept
it. Yeah, now they know how to fucking... Yeah.
So you got to give it up to those police stations and shit that keep that stuff and then like catch these motherfuckers down the road.
Someday we're going to find this motherfucker.
Yeah. Pretty amazing stuff. Now, what makes... Samuel Little unique, one of the things that makes him unique is he's black. You don't hear a lot of black serial killers. Now, we've talked about a couple here, DC Snipers. I know we've mentioned Wayne Williams, the Atlanta child murderer.
We haven't done him yet. But
we've got him coming up in January, so we're going to do that one. But you don't hear a lot of the black serial killers, so this is interesting. Most people consider them to be middle-aged white guys living in their mom's basement, you know.
Me.
But you're not in a basement.
Dude. No.
Now, most of Little's victims were black women, but there were some white women as well. So most serial killers do tend to stick to their own race, but not always.
Not always, right.
You know, Shawcross, I think, branched out. Well, and killed
Dahmer,
some,
even.
Right, Dahmer. That's a good point. So there have been some, but they typically tend to stay in their own race for some reason. Now, Chris, I didn't know much about this guy before I spoke with Jenny's sister-in-law, Sarah Goldenberg. She is an investigative journalist with 19 News in Cleveland who's done a three-part special called To Catch a Killer, and it's about Samuel Little. When we were out there on vacation visiting her brother and Sarah and their son Grayson, they were telling me about this. I had seen it on Facebook, but I thought it was bullshit. You know, I thought it was clickbait. I didn't go for it. But Sarah was telling me, oh, no, it's like real. And so when I finally saw the three-part series she did, it's really, really well done. And we're going to link to that in the episode description so you guys can watch that as well. But 19 News in Cleveland is the station that she works for. Now, of course, I asked her if she would come on the podcast, and she was all about it.
Work, but shit, man.
Yeah, yeah, her employer said no go. Yeah. And I don't know if they listened to us. I think it was probably just no in general.
Right.
Because they want to keep the story.
Fucking,
I get
exclusivity,
it.
Exclusivity, yeah.
Yeah, we understand. And Sarah, you know, was really nice, and I answered some questions I had after I watched her special that she did. So... definitely go watch that if you're interested in this case because it's very, very well done. Now, Sam Little was born in 1940 in Reynolds, Georgia. That's a little town, about 1,000 people. Claims his mother was a prostitute and abandoned him as a baby. And, dude, that seems to be a common thread with these motherfuckers, especially
Lucas,
the drifter
mom,
killers.
Like I was saying, Henry Lee Lucas, his mom.
Yeah.
Who else?
Pee-wee Gaskins.
Yeah, Pee-wee Gaskins. Yeah, like all of their fucking...
Now, he wasn't really a drifter killer, but there have been other serial killers with mothers that were prostitutes.
Just, like I said, the mommy issues got to fuck with you, man. And when you get abandoned that young and your mom's out banging.
Yeah. Now, soon after he was born, he moves to Lorain, Ohio to live with his grandmother. And that's Northeast Ohio, which is why Sarah was doing the story, because there were several victims in that area in Ohio. And he would kind of use this as home base while he was doing his drifter killing. So he would kind of
come back to that area.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, home.
Yeah. Now, as a young man, he was in trouble with the cops all the time. Burglaries, breaking and entering, other crimes. They definitely knew who he was. I did see and read something, and that his rap sheet is over 100 pages long, starting in 1956 with 26 arrests in 11 different states.
That's a lot of shit, man.
I can't even imagine trying to keep that shit straight. Holy right. shit,
man. And not even like, yeah, not even in the time when they communicate like they do now.
Right.
Like, fucking so each town had, what if each town had a 100-page rap sheet on this fucking dude?
Exactly. Each exactly
county or whatever.
So it's just no wonder why he was able to get away with it, because like you said, at a time when they weren't connected like they are now.
That was before the three-time loser shit.
True. True. It's just amazing, Chris, though, that they kept letting him out, you yeah. know. And we see that a lot with these guys, you know, like, of course, hindsight's 2020, so we know, you know, okay, the guy became a monster, but had they just left him in, like with Gacy, you know, I think, what is it, the day he would have got out of prison in Iowa was the day he was arrested in Chicago.
True.
So all of those victims, that's true, you know.
I forgot about that.
So you just wonder, like, what the hell, man? Like, why did you keep this motherfucker locked up, you know? So at 16, he ends up in juvie after stealing a bicycle. And this would mark the beginning of a career criminal who always seemed to get lucky and get in any real trouble. So 1961, he gets 3 years for robbing a furniture store in Lorain before he got on the road and started crisscrossing the country. It wasn't until 1970 in Homestead, Florida, that Sam Little started to kill young women. He would go home to Northeast Ohio off and on. And on one of those visits, he stole several pairs of jeans at a mall. And the detective that arrested him made some notes in the files. Like, something doesn't seem right with this guy. Something's he thought there was a lot more to it. And it's kind of amazing because, of course, now we know he was right. And he's interviewed on Sarah's documentary. It's very
that
cool.
The detective is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely have to watch that too. God damn it, I'm so behind.
I know, there's so much shit to watch and listen to with these. He noted that, you know, he had a lot of things in his possession that aroused suspicion. Also said that he had a cast on his leg but seemed to be able to walk just fine. So, Chris, I'm wondering if it's like a Bundy type thing
was
with
just
him.
Good. As a, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the obvious one there is,
that was,
he pulling that shit?
Yeah, that was Bundy spiel there. Like, yeah. Come here, help me
yeah,
out,
yeah, sympathetic. You know, I got all these books I'm carrying.
Yeah, can you help me carry? Oh, yeah. Now you're dead.
Right? So I don't know if he was doing that because I didn't see any other mention of that, but I did find it interesting that he said that he had a cast on his leg but seemed to be fine. There were some other cases over the years where Sam Little was actually tried for murder, but nothing ever stuck, man.
Yeah, that
the motherfucker just very, very lucky. One of them involved some hair evidence that was thrown out. He was acquitted. I think the fact that he's moving around so much, it's no wonder that he was able to avoid being caught.
And that's the thing. Just like Lucas, like traveling around all the time for right. Kylie Warnos. It took them how long to catch her? Like,
right. And she was just in Florida, I think.
Yeah,
but, you know, you're up and down the fucking 95.
Constantly
and,
traveling.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to catch these guys. Also, the fact that he was killing prostitutes, dude. We've done this one how many fucking times? You know, from Larry Bright to fucking right. Green River Killer, fucking Shawcross.
And being that they were black prostitutes back in like the 70s shit. Nobody right. gave a fuck about it.
Exactly. And so he's killing victims that are, you know, what do they call them, unpersons, you know, they're kind of off the grid,
the less than dead or whatever they call it.
Yeah And he didn't even know these victims, so that, you know, nothing to tie him to him, so it makes it really tough to catch him. He was smart enough to avoid capture for a very long time. Now it seemed like he paid attention when they did catch him. So he learned what kind of evidence they would have needed to keep him. So I think he got pretty smart and figured out, well, I'll just stay away from that shit, you know.
Yeah, get rid of fingerprints and all that shit, dude.
Right. Now, eventually the DNA would catch up with him. And that, of course, was something that when he was in his prime was not, you know, available. But like we were just saying, they keep that stuff, and then as the ship becomes, you know, more advanced, then they can go back.
Test it and go with that, especially the all the DNA they have on record now of lineage and
shit. Oh, yeah. Like you correctly pointed out, Golden State Killer, right. Man. Now it's a good example of would have never caught that motherfucker if it hadn't been for that DNA. You know?
That's fucked up.
It is. It's amazing. Now, I did see that he was actually caught in the act of raping a woman and choking her, and he gets fucking sentenced to 4 years and gets out in two. I mean, what the fuck?
I mean, that's the type of person you need to let out of jail, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, some poor guy that just got caught with a little bit of weed spends years and years and years right. in there.
That's
dude's
bullshit.
Doing some dumbass shit trying to kill this bitch and rape right. her. He right. gets out in two.
Yeah, that's fucking bogus, stupid. Man. Especially with the rap sheet.
And no, that's not why I went to jail. I just thought of that. I was like, that's right. That ain't why I went to jail.
Yeah, no, yours had nothing to do with that. Now, one case in Mississippi in 92, two friends wind up missing from a bar that they used to go to. Both were abducted by Samuel Little, beaten and strangled. One of the women was a drug addict who was estranged from her kids. Pretty sad story. The kids were missing her, and she's like talking to him on the phone, telling him how she's going to turn her life around, right. and she's going to come get him, and they're going to have a good life. And then this happens. But what's fucked up is that he lures two women at the same time out of there. And we know Bundy did that in one day, but not at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, he went back to that park and got somebody else.
Fucking shit, yeah.
But this motherfucker is just brazen, man. He don't give a fuck, you know.
That's another Bundy thing. He didn't do the necrophilia, but damn, that's another thing with the cast.
Yeah.
The fucking goddamn luring two women. Yeah.
Now, he's convicted of three murders in Los Angeles and gets three life sentences without parole due to the DNA that he left at the scene. Finding Little, though, would be difficult because he was a transient and he used various names. You know, he's got no job, you know, no car registered in his name, you know, no house, you know, nothing. So he's just kind of under the radar. But what he was doing was he was getting Social Security payments on a prepaid card. And that's how they caught him, was they were able to find when he used the card. And then they traced him to they got a hold of the FBI Violent Criminal Apprehension Program, or VICAP, to do a full background on him to see if any other crime showed up. And that's how they got him. And they found him in New Orleans with the card, and then they got him back to California. Okay. So pretty impressive police work there. At the time, the authorities didn't realize he was responsible for all the other murders that led up to those three, where the DNA was able to match him to that. So this Texas Ranger, not a guy on the baseball team, okay? The cops, okay? Every time I hear that, I think of the Texas Ranger.
The baseball team?
Yeah. James Holland, the Texas Ranger, was able to use DNA to link Sam to a murdered prostitute in Odessa, Texas in 94. And like we said, you definitely don't want to fuck around in Texas.
Nope.
Because we've talked to Tex a little bit on the show, and we know that
times he's been on here, and he's
Texas
like, yeah,
don't fuck
we
around,
don't
you
fuck
know,
around, dude.
Not at all. So the Ranger winds up flying out to the California State Prison where Little was being held. He got a profile on Little from the FBI, and things start to kind of fall in place with this guy. Sam Little is tried and convicted in Texas for the 94 murder, but is eventually returned to California, where he's serving life without parole.
California's like, no, you're not taking our tax dollars away from us.
That's right. And I bet this motherfucker kissed the ground when he got back
you
to
know
California.
He did. He's like,
get me the fuck out of this state, man. Fuck
you
Texas,
know he did.
Man.
You guys will at least let me live for years. Yeah. They'll put me to death tomorrow.
Texas don't fuck around, boy. Now, the Ranger was successful at getting Little to talk, and he spent over 700 hours interviewing this guy in 2018. Got a bunch of confessions. He is masterful at getting down to the killer's level and talking to him, getting him comfortable. You could see a lot of these on YouTube.
Yeah,
they
I
are chilling.
I watched
chilling,
some of the confession videos. Like, Little's like straight sitting there telling him everything, like
it happened 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, like where the foliage was and all kinds of
what she was
shit.
Wearing, yeah, how what, much she weighed, exactly, how tall like, she was. I'm like, holy
their names
shit.
And everything. It was like they said that like kind of one of the only things he didn't get right sometimes was like certain dates, but
right,
everything else is like shit that only the killer, the cops and the killer would know. They'd like tell him that shit.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's memory is unfucking believable, and he's so cavalier about it too. Like he's talking about, you know, going fishing or something, and yeah, it's like
for real,
what the fuck, man. I mean, what they did to these women was absolutely terrible. He also, you know, like they said, with these photographic memories, just fucking crazy, man. Now,
it's really kind of creepy watching him sit there talk about it like me and you were talking right now. Yeah. Just like,
it's fucking disturbing,
it
man.
It happens. Because like when the ranger or whatever asked him about a certain girl, it's like, oh, yeah, that was her. She had it on, like you said, remembers clothes and everything, cream-colored miniskirt and all this, and just, right, like, not giving a shit about it. Like,
no, not at all. Laughing about it in some of them.
Yep.
I couldn't imagine being in a room with that piece of shit for 700 hours.
God, dude.
You think about it, dude. That's like 4 or 5 months, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week.
That's a long fucking
time.
It
is a long
fucking
time.
I didn't even actually do the math on this thing, but Jesus fucking Christ,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, it's unfucking believable, man.
It was a full-time job.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
For like half a year. Now, Samuel Little begins to paint portraits of the faces. This is fucked up. And it's amazing that some of the families of the victims are able to identify them from the paintings. He did this for several of them. Some of them, though, shown side by side with their actual picture, don't really look a lot like them, but some are a little more close. But it's definitely weird with him doing these paintings that some of them had like a necklace or something that
something
stood
identifying.
Out. Like, oh, that might be my mom or my niece, yeah, or whatever. So very fucked up. Certainly not like a sketch artist level artwork, but he would paint these portraits.
Right. I think
and just
in some
fucking
of those
weird, man.
Isn't that the pictures they were showing with him when they were talking about the girl from Las Vegas? That was,
yeah,
his painting they were showing,
yeah,
in the corner, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very eerie. I'd never heard of a serial killer doing that before.
That
so
is pretty fucked up.
That's pretty fucking weird.
And that fact that family could look at the picture and be like, yep, that's fucking her.
Right. Now, he's also questioned by the police from Northeast Ohio in Cuyahoga County, where he's in prison, while he's in prison, I should say, in California. They said he was anxious to talk with them since they were from Cleveland and he wanted to know how the Browns were doing. I mean, are you fucking kidding me with this guy? I mean,
first of all, it's Cleveland. How many fucking Browns are going to... Oh, that's funny, dude. Ha, Cleveland Brown. I was just thinking of Family Guy, the dude from Family Guy. His name's Cleveland Brown.
Oh, right, right. So they pinned 4 of these murders on Sam Little, and he confessed to the crimes without any hesitation. So what the fuck with this guy, man, wanting to talk with them so they could fill him in on how the Browns were doing? I mean, wow.
That is, the Browns thing is, so how are the Browns doing? Are they still alive?
Dude, do you realize you're like getting ready to be fucking,
right,
you know, hauled off and fucking drawn and quartered, you know?
Now, being that he was like, he's pretty motionless in the interviews and shit when he's talking about it, do you,
right,
think that maybe he does, like, he's like, he is like, fuck it, let's let these families get some closure and shit?
I don't know. We'll talk about that as we wrap it up, but, you know, what his motivation is for doing this, I think that's part of it. I think,
yeah,
it is. Now, what's amazing is that the stuff, you know, he told him to check out, like you said, Chris, those details that, you know, stuff that wasn't in the newspapers, that wasn't on the news. Now, it wasn't like Henry Lee Lucas, who confessed to, you know, hundreds of murders just to get special treatment,
right,
and cigarettes.
It's like, I need a cheeseburger. I killed this person.
Yeah, they said in that Confessions of a Serial Killer, or the Confessions Killer documentary I was talking about, that one of the things that they gave him every time he confessed to a crime was a strawberry milkshake. So that's what he was doing this for, was strawberry milkshakes and cartons of Pall Mall cigarettes.
Fuck yeah, man.
And they said he drank fucking coffee by the gallon, man. It was fucking insane. So coffee, cigarettes, and strawberry milkshakes. This guy's for real, though. Sam Little's not like that.
No,
this is like legit, which is makes it even that much more
fucked up. I can prove that I did this.
That's why I think Henry Lee Lucas, to me, is almost comical because of him and Otis. And that special has a lot of Otis on there, too, where they're together. It's really fucking weird.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah, he's definitely a special one. Now, he reveals to the police how he selected his victims, which I find this very fascinating. He had a thing for women's necks.
Yeah, I see that.
Like, loved how smooth they were. He told them that if he saw a woman touch her neck, it was a sign from God that he was supposed to kill her.
Okay.
So that's kind of special. He also confessed that he was targeting women that no one would miss, just like we knew with the prostitutes. And we've heard this a lot. Jesperson would be another one that we mentioned and we've done on this podcast. He tried to leave minimal marks on the women, so when their bodies would be found months later, they would think they were just drug overdoses. They wouldn't even do much with it because they weren't worried about him.
He beat some of them, like physically.
Oh my God,
beat them, man.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, we're going to talk about that with him being a boxer or a fight, you know, professional, fighter. There's a lot of stuff on this guy that we've seen from other serial killers, Chris, but that whole God thing is another weird layer to this case, you know? I mean, that's adding just these weird things about this case that I find this very fascinating.
Fuck, what was his name? We just did the earthquake dude.
Heron? No. God damn it.
I know I put you on the spot.
No, I should know it. We just did it. Ed Kemper's buddy, Herbie.
Yeah, Herbie.
Yeah. Yeah, her old Herb out there in California, he was the one that thought he was saving the state by killing women. So I found out from Sarah Goldenberg's special, To Catch a Killer, that Samuel Little had a girlfriend for a period of time who was helping him. Her name was Jean Dorsey. Now, they met in jail. This is kind of interesting. It's an old jail where the males and females could actually talk to each other through the walls.
Can't do that no more.
No. And after they got out, they were inseparable. So even though Jean was 30 years older than him, very odd combination of people here.
That's strange shit.
So they report that Gene was driving him around and apparently helped him clean up the car after he murdered some of the women, despite Little claiming she had no idea that he was even doing this. He said that she knew he was going out to have sex with other women.
But not killing him. He's legitimately crossing state lines just to commit murder and then going back home and shit.
I know. He's so ballsy,
that
man.
That was that one girl that was in, I think, in Ohio or something, want ride to fucking Florida. He drove her to Florida, killed her, and drove back.
Yeah.
I'll give you a ride to your deathbed. Fuck. Right.
Now, I have my doubts that she didn't know anything about this. She helped him steal to sustain their existence. They would steal stuff, and then he would help her sell it. So it made it really hard to catch him. She was with him for 15 years, but died of natural causes several years ago, leaving Little to survive on his own, which probably was his undoing. He started getting sloppy.
It's like she's not here helping. Yeah, his mind was gone about it, too.
Right.
Like another Bundy thing, when you forget where you put the lug wrench or whatever.
Right, right.
Fucking.
Yeah, start getting sloppy, start getting cocky. You're never going to get caught. Since she was dead by the time he got caught, we really never know what her involvement was, because he swears she knew nothing about it.
He's going to claim her innocence, not give her a bad name and shit.
Mm-hmm. Now, I had no idea he had accomplice on this whole mission here, Chris.
Yeah, this is the first I'd heard about it. When you was telling me about Sarah's doc about it and shit. Yeah. I didn't even know that.
It's fucking crazy. And the parallels to Henry Lee and Otis Toole are kind of funny here. Now, he claimed to have made money competitively boxing, which apparently he was good at during several stints in jail.
Yeah, learned how to fight in jail.
Yeah. A few survivors of Sam Little said that he sucker punched them, knocking them out. So he used his boxing skills in the murders. Now, he was 5'11", weighed about 235 when he was captured. So he would have been a middleweight. He would have had a big advantage over most of these females, of course, who are usually about 150 pounds. Yeah, Little claimed to police that he was called the Mad Daddy or the Mad Machine when he was fighting. So,
I like the Mad Machine.
Now, Sam Little would slowly strangle the women, letting up at times to prolong the process. This is so fucked up. He did this in what he called breath play or a gentle kill. Sounds like he was playing God, like many of these serial killers.
A God complex.
Yeah, to show his dominance over the victims. He would later refer to the victims as his babies, and his memories are his trophies, according to the FBI. So definitely fucking weird, man.
Yeah, out there.
He loved the idea of women knowing they were going to die. Now, Chris, there's another one we did. Harvey Glattman, the Glamour Girl Slayer. We did that one a while back. That was episode 12. He was the one, Chris, remember, that would convince the women that he was a photographer.
Yes.
For crime magazines.
I'm like, I can't remember.
And then he tied him up, and then he's like, okay, now I'm going to fucking kill
now
you.
You're dead.
And he started taking their pictures as they're freaking out.
Back in the fucking old Pulp Fiction magazine days, yeah.
Yeah, and actually, the interview that I did with Dr. Catherine Ramsland, she talks about Glattman.
Does she?
Because BTK was all about Glattman, too, with the tying him up and shit.
That makes sense. I mean,
so, yeah. BTK likes him. So Glattman, for being a relatively obscure serial killer, is kind of oddly one of the ones that some of these guys kind of aspire to.
Well, quote, idolize him and
shit. Yeah, it's fucking weird, man. So go check out episode 12. Would have been one of those first ones we did on Harvey Glattman, the Glamour Girl Slayer. That was a weird one. Now, Chris, some crazy shit with the way he would slowly strangle him with the, you know, letting up and then squeezing and letting up and kind of like a python would fucking kill, man. Definitely getting off on that, man. That's fucking weird.
It's you got to have that special touch in your fingertips to know when to let go just right.
Right.
Like, you're going to die? Not yet, bitch. Now you're mine.
Right. I mean, I can't even imagine the terror that had to be going through these women's minds. Dude. It's just fucking awful. And I wonder if the reason why he picked up the sex workers was because of his mother, you know, kind of striking out against his mom, you know.
I'm sure. I'm sure that was definitely a thing. Like, mom abandoned me because she was a prostitute. All these, another one that's like, these are just bad people. I'm getting rid of them. Maybe,
right.
At the time.
Right. Like, Ridgway was all about that. Yeah, Shawcross. Of course, Shawcross had an issue in Vietnam, I think, with a prostitute, didn't he?
Yeah, got the syphilis or not. Or
gonorrhea
shit.
Like that. Yeah. So definitely an interesting case here. Now, he's now 79 years old. He's not doing good health-wise. He knows he's done. He's obviously knows he's going to die in prison. So I think at this point he's trying to get that notoriety. He surpassed Gary Ridgway with the highest body count of any U.S. serial killer with 60 so far. But more cases being investigated. And it's hard to really know how much, how high the final count will be.
I mean, even after he dies, they still got the DNA. If they find some reason to fucking be like, hey, let's check on this.
Yeah.
Even after he's dead, I'd be like, well, another fucking one's been added to old fucking Little. So, but like I said, already more numbers than anybody in the United States.
Right.
So
I wouldn't be surprised if he gets over 100, but at this point it's 60 as far as I know.
Right.
So we'll see. Definitely an interesting one, Chris. Anything you want to add? Because I know you watch some stuff on this too.
I just read a little bit and listened to some stuff. Not much more I think I need to add. Other than the dude's a fucking goddamn monster.
Yeah, an absolute piece of shit. I mean, I know we laugh and stuff about this stuff, but there's nothing to laugh about, obviously.
Not in
this
serious
is just our way.
Way
of doing what we do, but you know, these people we talk about are fucking awful fucking abominations.
Piece of shit.
Total piece of shit. Now, my research for this episode was done with a variety of documentaries on Sam Little. I have to say that To Catch a Killer special on 19 News in Cleveland that Sarah Goldenberg did was fantastic. There were a few other documentaries on YouTube that you could check out.
Yeah, there was a few on there.
Those interviews you talked about.
Yeah, the interviews are fucking great.
Yeah.
And there was a couple other podcasts, like one, two that I listened to. They didn't have much, but it was stuff I checked out.
Yeah, I stumbled on one I'd never heard before called The Murder Squad. It was really good. A former police detective from the San Francisco Bay Area was on there, and he was talking about this from like the investigative and how they tracked him and shit. Very cool stuff with the card and how they tracked it to New Orleans. So definitely that would be a good one to listen to. So I'm sure you can find a lot of things, and these investigations are ongoing, and I'm sure there's going to be many, many more convictions of women that he's killed, because I think 60 is definitely not all of them. That's for sure.
Right.
Now, next week, we're going to be doing a feature on the cult leader of the Branch Davidians in Waco, David Koresh, dude.
Old
it's going to be
David
a good one.
Koresh. Yeah, this is going to be a real good one. We're going to have part of our interview with David Thibodeau.
Yeah, David was
Dark
great.
History.
We met him at that convention and talked to him for quite a while, man.
Yeah, we did. We got some
and, of
good
course,
stuff
he was a survivor at Waco. He was the last one to walk out of there. He was the drummer for David Koresh's band, and he was really cool. He gave me a CD.
Yeah, the CD with all the sermons and some of his songs and shit.
Yeah, it's got some David Koresh sermons on there and then some of his songs. So we're definitely going to have a good chunk of that interview with David on the episode, as well as some music and some of the sermon excerpts from Koresh. So it's going to be a really, really good one.
Yeah,
and then
sure.
Also, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but I do have a strange tie with Waco.
Right.
When I was in the Army. And so we'll talk about that next week. So it should be a good one. But anyway, dude, I think I hear that familiar music. I think we know what's going on. We got CK ready to deal some fucking metal knowledge, brother. So what do
one
we got to do,
time,
man?
Let's get our fucking metal on.
Fuck yeah.
Known the world over as the master of metal, the crusher of posers, and Murder Metal Mayhem's knower of all things metal, hailing from Wild Band Street in Danbury, Connecticut, standing at 6 feet of brutal, punishing madness, weighing in at 220 pounds of poser pulverization, the one, the only, toughest bastard on the planet, Chris C.K. Kovacs!
All right, we got the great metal motherfucker on.
Yes, we do. It's good to hear your voice again, brother.
What's up, bro? Nice to have you back.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, back from special assignment, CK. I know you were a little concerned, man. He was gone, and we were all kind of trying to figure it all out, but we got through it, and it's good to have Chris back and good to have you on here talking some metal. So fucking kicking it here with you on a Tuesday night. So So how you been doing, man? You had a little return trip to the hospital, man.
Yeah, I got a little bit of an infection. I'm going to be okay, though. I'm on antibiotics.
Good.
Cool.
It's all good.
Awesome. Well, very good. Now, you had a band that we're going to do that's kind of hard to imagine. We haven't done this one yet.
It kind of is, honestly.
Kind of an icon in the world of metal. So who are we talking about this time?
None other than the legendary Motorhead, the band formed by Ian Lemmy Kilmeister. Lemmy got the nickname Lemmy because his deal was he was always asking telling people, lend me a fiver.
Get the fuck out of here. Seriously?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's how he got the nickname.
Nice.
Lend me a fiver. That's classic. I love it.
I mean, Motorhead started in 75, but Lemmy was pretty much an icon even before that. He was, originally he was a roadie for Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, okay.
Really?
The later went on to play with the legendary Hawkwind, which he got thrown out of. He says because he was doing the wrong drugs.
The wrong, not just drugs in general, the wrong drugs.
He was doing the wrong ones.
God damn it, I hate it when that happens.
So he decided to form Motorhead, which he said, if we move next door to you, your lawn would die. Because that's how heavy and rude we're going to be. Considering Motorhead's been around for 40 years, they really didn't have that many members as far as in the group. So I could honestly, with this, I could honestly go through, you know, each incarnation, because there wasn't really that many. The original band was Lemmy, Larry Wallace, Lucas Fox on drums, and eventually they recruited Fast Eddie Clark on second guitar. Shortly after Larry Wallace left, because he didn't think that Motorhead was really going to go anywhere.
Looking for that money.
Yeah, exactly. So they were down to a three-piece. They were signed with United Artists Records and recorded a debut album in 75, 76, around that time. United Artists did not like what they recorded and shelved the album. Later on, Lemmy was able to get a deal with a smaller label, Chiswick, which he was able to get a couple of singles recorded. Eventually, they just re-recorded the very first album that United Artists shelved. And that was the first album called Motorhead, with the classic song, Motorhead.
Right?
Nice.
And eventually, you know, when Motorhead started to get a name for themselves, United Artists released the first album anyway under the name On Parole. You know, of course, they got to grab that money.
Yeah,
of course.
They recorded that one album for that label. Later on, a couple years later or a year later, it's signed with Bronze Records, which was kind of an independent label at the time. And even though they were supposed to record only, you know, a couple singles, they recorded the classic Louie Louie, the cover version from the 60s.
Right.
Which is fucking heavy as hell. If nobody's ever heard that single, check it out. It's just a heavy fucking version, and Lemmy just kills it. Bronze decided that, you know what, we're going to record a full album. So Motorhead recorded the legendary first album, Overkill, which to me I think has the very first song with double bass drum being the song Overkill. Phil Taylor.
Nice.
Yeah, Filthy Phil Taylor said he was not going to put in second bass drum until he actually learned how to play it. So once he was in the studio, he just decided to keep going with the double bass. And Lemmy said, that's pretty cool. And they formed a riff around the double bass drum.
Nice. All
right. That's pretty cool when you form the riff around the fucking bass.
Oh, yeah.
And that album like had fucking some great fucking songs that they still do live, well, did live until Lemmy passed away. Overkill, Stay Clean, Capricorn, No Class, Tear You Down, Metropolis, all those songs were still in our live set.
Nice.
You know, and that was so, that took off so quick, they went back in the studio the same year and recorded a second album, Bomber. So they released two albums within 1979. And not only did they release two albums, they released two albums with great fucking songs. I mean, Bomber had Sweet Revenge, Stone Dead Forever, All the Aces, and the song Bomber itself. So, you know, you got two albums in that same year that just totally kicked ass. You know, and they toured, went back in the studio shortly after that, recorded the classic of all classics, Ace of Spades.
Oh, hell yeah.
Was Lemmy like a big time poker player or some shit?
No, I think he was just, well, in his later years, he liked to sit down at the Rainbow Bar and Grill.
Video poker.
Yeah, he played video poker, which I'll get into later in a little while, actually. Because there's a funny story of what the Rainbow Bar and Grill did right before he was dying, is really cool.
Right on.
Nice.
You know, another album with some classic songs, Ace of Spades, Love Me Like a Reptile, We Are the Road Crew, Jailbait, The Chase is Better Than the Catch. All these songs, they played live, you know, until recently, they weren't a band anymore. So it just shows you that, you know, within a 2 year period, what this band accomplished.
Right.
You know, and because Ace of Spades took off, they took a little time, they toured. Was another 2 years before they went back in the studio. In 1982, they released one of my favorite albums, Iron Fist. And again, you know, an album that just doesn't fucking miss. And unfortunately, at that time, that'd be the last album that the original classic Motorhead lineup would record together, because Fast Eddie Clark was not happy with the direction the band was going. I guess Lemmy decided he wanted to record a single with Wendy O. Williams, Stand By Your Man, and he didn't think that was a great direction for the band to go on. And obviously, Lemmy doesn't give a fuck. He's gonna do what he wants to do.
In my band, I'm going to do what I want.
Zero fucks given.
You know. So, unfortunately, Fast Eddie Clark left. He left and he formed the band Fastway with Pete Way from UFO. They had a little bit of success. They were more hard rock.
I think I saw them open for Maiden. Didn't they open for...
Yeah, they actually did, I think, open on the Peace of Mind tour.
I think that's when Peace of Mind. I went to that, and I think I did see them open. That was cool.
I believe they did. I mean, they were a pretty good band. They were more hard rock, metal, / bluesy. That's the direction he wanted to go, and it was his band. So, you know... So, Lemmy looked for another guitarist. Brian Robertson from Thin Lizzy just left Thin Lizzy. He recruited Brian Robertson from Thin Lizzy. They quickly recorded Another Perfect Day. Another one of my favorite albums by Motorhead. They have a Crusher song in that called One Track Mind. Dancing on Your Grave. Back at the Funny Farm, Shine. It's just another great album. I mean, this band was not missing. I mean, they were firing on all four cylinders. Anything they put out was just, to me, was gold. There was no throwaway album at this time.
That's amazing.
Unfortunately, Brian Robertson didn't work out. Musically, he was fine. But on stage, he was wearing some, like, weird stuff that Lemmy couldn't deal with, like ballet slippers, pink pants, and Lemmy's like, you know, this ain't gonna work.
Sounds like Hank Sherman and Merciful Fate.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and before after they recorded Ace of Spades, they recorded the legendary No Sleep Till Hammersmith live album.
No shit.
Oh yeah.
Which to me is considered one of the greatest live albums of all time. I don't think there's any overdub on it, so I think it's an actual live album.
That's fucking cool as fuck.
after another perfect day, Lemmy decided to kind of go in a different direction with guitars. So he went out and he recruited two guitars. He wanted to go back to a dual guitar band. He found two unknowns, Phil Campbell and his dude called Wurzel. And what they decided to do was Lemmy decided that they owed Bronze Record one more album. So they were going to do a compilation album, and on that compilation album, they were going to record four new songs with the new lineup. Out of those sessions came the classic single Killed by Death.
Nice.
Right.
Which is just a killer song, and a great, great song to show off the new band. They had a couple other new tunes on it. They had a tune called Snaggletooth, Locomotive, and there's one more song I can't remember the name of that were new. But if you want to get into Motorhead, this would be the album, the compilation album I would tell everybody to get. To me, it's one of the greatest compilation albums that I own. I'm not a big proponent of buying compilation albums or getting compilation albums if I have the whole collection. But this one I would definitely recommend anybody getting into Motorhead. Get that compilation album.
What's it called?
No Remorse.
Okay.
Obviously, Metallica stole No Remorse from
that title. Oh, yeah. Metallica stole lots of things.
Yeah.
Including their own name.
After that recording, after that session, Motorhead actually took a little time, which was the longest time they've taken between albums, which is 3 years, to write and record and again put out the classic Orgasmatron, which people to this day consider their greatest album. Unfortunately, at that time, after... I believe it was after Another Perfect Day, Filthy Phil Taylor quit. They recruited Pete Gill from Saxon, who just left Saxon. And he was at this time now the drummer for Motorhead. So now you only have one original member left. But that's okay, because they still kicked ass. They toured behind Orgasmatron, and that was actually the first time I saw Motorhead. And they were phenomenal, and they were fucking loud as hell.
Oh, I can only imagine how fucking loud Motorhead would have been, dude.
I will never forget that. That was the first time I never wore earplugs. And I said, if I ever see them again, I will wear earplugs. Because they were so fucking loud.
I never got to see them. I'm kind of mad that I didn't. But I know that I had that experience when I saw the band Vader. For the first time, holy shit, I was like really concerned. My ears rang for like 3 days.
Oh,
I was
had
like,
shows that
okay,
I've been to
I think
that
I really
that,
did
like,
something to my what? Ears. Yeah, that was bad.
Exactly.
I've been to shows like that.
But that changed my philosophy behind having earplugs.
Whether yeah. whether you use them or not, you still get them on you, right?
No, I used them after that because I that scared the shit out of me because my ears were ringing for like days.
Right.
Again, Motorhead quickly put out, went in the studio, recorded another album, Rock and Roll. Another fucking classic. So this is making it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 albums that they, without a miss. And at this time, I don't think there was any band that, to me, that had 9 albums without a clunker.
Right.
You know, they recorded heavily behind that album. I saw them on that tour as well. We took a little hiatus, spent some time in a recording studio. You didn't hear much from them between, after they got off the road with Orgasmatron and... Between Rock and Roll and the next album, which was recorded or released in 1991. So you didn't hear much from Motorhead within a 4-year range. 1991, they were actually signed to a subsidiary of Epic Records, WTG Records, and put out another fucking great album, 1916, which is probably my favorite album by him of all time. It's just a great album. And at this time, Lemmy was also was writing for Ozzy as well. He wrote majority of the songs on No More Tears.
Lemmy wrote most of the No More Tears songs?
He wrote probably half that album.
Really?
He co-wrote half that album.
Did not know that. That's cool.
Yeah. So, I guess within that time, he was writing for other people at the same time. You know. 1916 was a great album. The first song, I'm the one to sing the blues, just a fucking great lead song. They recorded a song called R-A-M-O-N-E-S. Obviously, it spells Ramones, because they were just huge, huge fans of the Ramones. And the great thing about this fucking song is, it sounds like they took a song from the Ramones and covered it, but in actuality, Lemmy wrote the song.
Oh, nice.
So it sounds like a Ramones song. To the point that, you know, the Ramones actually covered it themselves and recorded it on one of their last two albums. It's just a great album. And unfortunately, I believe that's 10 great albums, and it came to a halt after that. Their next album, which I thought was a piece of shit, March or Die, came out. And to me, it was just not a Motorhead album. I believe he wrote the theme song for Hellraiser, and that's the song that was on that album.
Right. Okay.
And it was a little bit commercial, and MTV played it all the time. I mean,
yeah.
If you watch Headbangers Ball, you saw that video all the time. It was just not, to me, a Motorhead. It didn't sound like a Motorhead album. You know, to this day, I still try to put it on, and I still can't get into it.
It just ain't the same.
You know, and thank God, in 1993... And during this time, Filthy Phil Taylor came back for a couple albums. 1993 was when they got the drummer of all drummers,
who I never thought
would join Motorhead. And he was able to finally get Mickey D after he asked him a couple times to join Motorhead.
Nice.
And Mickey D to play with Motorhead after he's playing with King Diamond, because he's such a technical drummer.
Yeah, it's a nipper.
I'm like, this ain't going to fucking work. There's no fucking way in hell Mickey D's going to last in Motorhead. I mean, because he's just not seeing Motorhead. It's not that it's technical and that you need talent to play, but Mickey D is just a very progressive drummer. And you know, to me, it would be a waste of his talent, or I thought.
Right.
You know, I was fucking proven wrong. But they came out in 93 with the album Bastards, and it was like back to classic Motorhead. In your face, fucking freight train running over your fucking skull, Motorhead album. And at that time, it was the last album that they recorded with Wurzel. So after that album, they were pretty much back to a three-piece until the end of the band. And that's where that's how it stayed until you know, Lemmy passed.
Right, right.
And in those times, they released some great albums. They released Sacrifice in 95. They released Overnight Sensation in 96. We Are Motorhead in 2000, which I wasn't too fucking fond of. To me, that was another clinker. Luckily, they came back with Hammered in 2002, which is another killer album. Inferno in 2004, and in 2006, 2008, they came out with two albums that I thought were not up to par, Kiss of Death and Motorizer. You know, and this is with, still with the same lineup of Phil Campbell, Lemmy, and Mickey. 2010, they released another classic, The World Is Yours. 2013, Aftershock. And the last album, 2015, Bad Magic. And in between this time, I just want to let you know that Lemmy had a side project that he started, I believe, in 99, called Headcat.
Really?
What that band was, it was a throwback 50s band.
Oh, wow.
Wait, hold on.
Yes.
Go ahead. Explain.
And this is going to freak you out even more because they're still together. And when I tell you who replaced Lemmy, you guys are going to be like, holy shit. He formed this band with Slim Jim Phantom from Stray Cats.
Okay.
And some rockabilly guitarist from Texas.
Okay.
And what they did was they covered 50 songs, like rockabilly songs.
Oh, wow. That's fucked up.
And they pulled off. Lemmy pulls it off vocally. He does a fucking great job of these songs. It's songs I probably wouldn't listen to otherwise. But since Lemmy does it, it's killer stuff.
It makes sense now that you said the name of the band's Headcats, right? Motorhead, Stray Cats. Makes sense. Right. I get it now.
Now, when Lemmy passed away, they recruited another bass player / singer. And that is David Vincent, who used to be with Morbid Angel.
Oh,
are
nice.
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
This is fucking
crazy.
They haven't
recorded anything with him yet, but there's stuff on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
As far as, you know. And unfortunately, in 2011, Wurzel passed away, even though he wasn't with the band. Early 2015, Phil Filthy Animal Taylor, he passed away from a heart attack. Obviously, we know that Lemmy passed away at the end of December in 2015. The guy gave his heart out until he passed away, sick and all, before he even knew he had the cancer and he was so sick. He was still giving 100% to his shows. And it's kind of sad because he had tests done and he was in his apartment and his doctor came to see him and told him, basically, I can't do anything for you. You got 2 to 6 months to live.
Right.
That fucking sucks.
And Lemmy, and then what the Rainbow Bar and Grill did was they took that video machine that he played all the time and took it up to his apartment.
Oh, cool.
Oh, nice. They took it up for him to play like fucking...
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
So, he would have something to do because he was so sick.
Right.
And he wasn't able to obviously go to the bar and grill and do what he did. But, he died a few days after that. And it was one of the only funerals I remember ever seeing on YouTube, being broadcast live on YouTube. It was actually like a fucking king's funeral.
Right.
That's how popular and respected this dude was. 40 years, he did what he wanted to do, played the music he wanted to play. He didn't give a fuck. He didn't fucking back down from anybody.
Right.
He was the real thing. And he... Everybody says he was just the kindest person. Dave Grohl gave a story. And we all know how Lemmy liked to smoke.
Right.
He said, Dave Grohl went in with his family. He said, it's the only time I saw Lemmy put out a cigarette because he didn't want my kids to be around to smoke.
Oh, wow.
So that's the kind of heart this guy had.
Right.
Unfortunately... Fast Eddie Clark passed away in 2018, and the original guitarist Larry Wallace just passed away this year. So there is no original members left of this band. I know Phil Campbell is doing solo stuff. Mickey D is now a member of the Scorpions.
Right, I saw that.
And I know Mickey D said the greatest time of his life was.
Playing with Motorhead. Hell yeah, dude. I bet it was a party the whole fucking time.
Oh, I can't even imagine it.
You know, So, you know, that's why he, I guess, as great of a drummer he is, that's why he stayed with Motorhead for more than, 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, that original Wurzel, Phil Campbell, Lemmy, Mickey D lineup, for the most part, that was
almost Motorhead,
35 years.
Jesus.
You know, and for a band to be have a 40-year history and not have too many lineup changes, it's got to tell you something.
Right.
You know, and that's Motorhead.
That's awesome, man. That was a very thorough dig in deep on Motorhead, but that was really cool. There was a lot of things I did not know about Lemmy.
Quick fun facts for all any of you wrestling fans out there. Like, Motorhead had a song called The Game Triple H.
Right.
Like, Triple H, that was his entrance music. And
The Game.
Yeah, The Game. And another one was King of Kings. And Triple H from wrestling, like, spoke at his funeral and shit, too.
Oh, wow.
Yes, he did. I meant to say that. Thanks, Chris, for mentioning that.
Oh, no problem, bro.
Yeah, he did. He did.
That's fucking cool, but, man. So you got a lost classic also for us this time, CK, right?
Yeah. After Chris Poland left Megadeth or got kicked out, whatever the fuck happened,
right?
He formed a band called Damn the Machine. And this album came out of nowhere. Nobody knew it was coming out. I had a friend who worked at a CD distribution warehouse. And he threw it to me. He goes, "You might like this." I put it on. I was like, holy shit. What it is, it's a progressive metal album with Chris Poland playing. I don't really know any of the other people on the album, but it's just a killer album. I believe it's available on Amazon Prime as far as streaming. You get the physical copy used, but if you get a chance to check it out, it's just a really, really good album. They only had one album come out, and it's really a great album.
Yeah, Chris Poland's an amazing guitar player, so I'm sure it's wicked.
Yeah, and he does the singing on it too.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that. Nice. Very cool. Now, CK, next week you're going to be doing one of my favorites, The German Metal Gods Accept, man. That was a good call. Definitely ready for some of that shit, because that's another band that's fucking iconic in metal, man.
Yeah, I that's another band I can't believe we didn't do.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, that's a great story, I'm sure. Definitely ready to hear that one next week. Now, you know, we've been talking about this 666 Club and the benefits that people get. Chris and CK, you know, we're trying to push it because people, you know, can get in on some bonus VIP action if they go to patreon.com/murdermetalmayhem. We'll link to that in the episode description. Just $3 a month gets you a lot of great bonus content, VIP access, discounts on merch, and much, much more. The karaoke stuff ahead of time. So go check it out, because CK, we got CCK here with the Santa hat on
and garland the garland.
And I don't want to get him all fired up, get people mad that they're not joining the 666 Club. So.
Yeah, don't get CCK fucking going. You know, you don't want to piss him off.
No, not at all. Good. Now, CK, we were talking about this in our pre-show meeting because I actually saw you post about this first on Facebook. And I laughed out loud because I'm like, this is exactly what I've been saying. But I know we're going to get some people upset. And it's kind of like,
I don't give a
kind of like when I said I hate the band Kiss and I got a little bit of flack for it, whatever. Although I did get your brother Michael tagging me in every Kiss thing.
Oh, I know.
just like I tag him in the Five Finger Death Punch stuff. Yeah. So, but anyway. CK, you went off about this whole Motley Crue, Def Leppard, Poison tour. What the fuck,
no,
man?
I don't mind fucking Def Leppard, Poison, or I think they have Joan Jett.
Yeah, Joan Jett's opening, yeah.
You know what? But fucking Motley Crue, if the fans think they're doing it for them, they're delusional. Because they're not doing it for the fans. One, this band doesn't even like each other anymore.
Right.
I just read an I just read an interview 6 months ago where I believe Nikki Sixx was talking and saying, no, we're not even really friendly. We have nothing in common.
Wow. Right?
You know, don't retire. Say you're going to retire. And then, you know, charge the fans all this amount of money to see a final show.
Right.
And then.
And to me, you're fucking them over by coming back.
Right.
Why'd you pay?
And charging, and you know they're going to charge a mass amount of money because they're getting paid big bucks for this fucking tour.
Yeah, oh, tickets I'm sure are going to be a retarded price. And I don't know if you guys have seen the fucking video of fucking Motley Crue, fucking goddamn Vince Neil on stage just fucking kickstart my heart, dude. Fucking.
Yeah.
Just fucking it all up. I'm just like, oh shit.
It's awful. It's really bad.
He's gonna die of a fucking heart attack.
He was never a good singer, so 30 years later ain't gonna get any better. You know, 50 pounds and 30 years not to been kind to Vince Neil, but my God. I mean, I guess everybody to each their own. You know, you gotta wanna go see Def Leppard and Motley Crue, whatever. All I'm saying is it drives me nuts when something becomes big in like a week. And it's like first you hear about it and then you hear about it like non-fucking-stop. It's like the NBA
right.
and LeBron James. I want to throw myself through a fucking plate glass fucking window every year with that shit. It's like instant fucking non-stop fucking drip of the tickets and the dates. And all this stuff, and it's ridiculous, man.
I mean, if you want to pay the money to go see them, and you know, that's your choice.
Of course, of course.
And to me, they're not the first band to have done that.
No.
Supposedly, you know, the only band that I've ever seen that actually did it and did it right was the Ramones. To the point where Johnny Ramone actually, the day after his last show when they played in California, sold his equipment.
Wow.
Yeah, damn. I'm like, yep, I'm done.
He goes, I retired from my job. My job was playing music. I got rid of my job.
Fucking A.
And they were at the same, they couldn't stand each other either. But the thing is, I've seen them minimum probably 60 times.
Yeah, I've heard you say that before. You've seen the Ramones
and
shit.
And every time I've seen them, you know, whether they didn't like each other or not, they fucking kicked ass, and they were tight as hell, and they put on a good show, and they didn't fuck the fans over.
Right.
Right. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, again, I'm not a big fan of any of these bands. I know, CK, you said you know, I used to like Def Leppard, the first couple albums. I liked the first couple Motley Crue albums, but I was also 17 years old, and as an adult, I just can't deal with it. But again, everybody has obviously the right to like whatever they want. I just drives me nuts when something becomes an overnight sensation and that's all people are talking about. And like you said, I mean, it sounds like it's a money grab and people are going to be spending a stupid amount of money. I mean, I saw Motley Crue in the third row on the Shout at the Devil tour when they opened for Ozzy. That was cool, but ever since then, not a fan of it. My tastes got heavier. I'm not really a big fan of that stuff. But whatever. I just thought we'd get you fired up talking about the that Motley Crue, Def Leppard, Poison thing. Any other national news, CK? Any albums dropping or anything like that you want to mention?
It's really a slow time for this year for albums. I know Terrorizer is coming out with a live album this week. Was it last week? I believe it was last week. The new Cattle Decapitation.
Right. I was just gonna say.
I hear that 920 in the background.
Yeah. and that's a killer album.
Yeah, I haven't listened. I haven't had a chance.
They have the last song, Death Owls, is 9 minutes.
Oh wow!
It's killer.
Damn.
And the funny thing is, they have a narration from, I think it's the drummer from the jam band Fish.
Hmm. Oh, really?
He's a huge fan of them. He loves them.
Wow.
Is it?
You know, so
is it because of all the vegan straight edge stuff? Well, I guess Fish.
I have no. It might be that might be part of it, but he said he just loves the band.
I guess Fish is like a hippie band anyway. They do drugs.
Probably. I would assume so.
Right. I mean, it only makes sense.
anything else?
Yeah, there's not really much coming out. I don't think there's really anything
right on
coming out till after the new year. I mean, there's a couple things I could let you know that's coming out after the new year.
Right.
Let me bring up my list, see if I got my list.
Shit.
Let me see.
I'm sure most things will be after the new year anyway. It's getting to that point of year. Ain't nobody trying to
fucking. Yeah, they usually hold off.
Not much, huh?
There's a new band called Archon Angel, which has former Sabotage vocalist Zach Stevens coming out. Sodom has a EP, Hell in the Frontline Trench, which I believe is four new songs, and then a couple live songs from previous albums. Kurt Weinstein has a solo album from Crowbar coming out in January called Dream in Motion. And there's this band with George Lynch coming out. And he's got this vocalist who, I swear to God, sounds exactly like friggin' Dio.
Oh, no wow. Shit.
I couldn't believe it. It's called Dirty Shirley.
Hmm.
And it's hard rock metal, but the dude has his Dio vibe. And I mean, to me, it sounds pretty damn good. I wonder what, I'm interested to see what the rest of the album sounds like. Oh, and also Jamie Josta has a solo album coming out, I believe, next week.
Okay. Very cool.
And I believe that is it until
next year.
After winter. Yeah.
Now, Chris, you went to a local metal show. Blood Feud did their album release party. You were there. How was that, man?
Goddamn disgust. It was really badass, dude. That was a great turnout there. Like I said, I didn't stay the whole time because I took my kids because that's what I do.
Right. But Gormonger was there, right?
Yeah, he played. Who else played? Goddamn it. Cody and Bonesaw fucking goddamn.
Interspecies Erotica.
Interspecies Erotica played. Fucking, I can't even remember who played. I was kind of busy. But yeah, it was a badass show. Great show. Like I said, great turnout. Everybody seemed to be having a good fucking time.
That's awesome.
Fool's Brew played.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a bunch of bands there.
That's that really cool, awesome, man. The Night Shop's doing some metal, and our buddies Blood Feud with their new album Disgust out on 49 Records. We had them in here in the studio not that long ago. Now, speaking of local metal, we made a big announcement on Facebook the other day, and I've been getting a lot of people messaging me about this, so I thought I'd bring it up tonight on the show. A lot of listeners very happy about this, especially the Central Illinois fans listening, because Low 12, my former band, been many times asked, what we're doing, what's going on. I run into people. Can't believe you guys are done. You know, it's been since October 2016, after 18 years, that we called it quits. And of course, I used to play bass and sing in Low 12, and I thought it would be cool to bring the former band members in to do like a special bonus type episode. But then the more I thought about it, I'm like, it might be cool to just do a regular episode with Low 12 in here with us. So we're going to do that in January for a podcast that will be live in February. So we'll record it and then use it the week of February 17th.
That's my birthday.
That's right. Yeah, your birthday's the 17th. Mine's the 18th, right? Which is really funny. So the week of our birthdays, I'm going to be in Arizona. And so we're going to play that episode then. But what's cool about it, Chris, we're going to do a feature on who that particular episode.
Our theme song guy, Gacy.
That's right. Yeah, since Low 12's famous, or at least famous to our fans here in Central Illinois and beyond, but our core fans are here, played their song Crawl Space.
That
was
always the fucking pit bringer every time.
We had to play Crawl Space. Just about every show we played Crawl Space. But anyway, that's of course about John Wayne Gacy. So I thought it would be really cool to do Gacy in that episode. Now, Anybody that's a fan of the podcast knows we have talked about Gacy in episode 33 when we were live at the Dark History Convention last year.
In 2018, however, yeah.
All we did was talk about his artwork. We did not get into the cases and his background, like, which we're going to do with Low 12 in here with us. So that should be really fun. We're going to have Wes Pollock, our drummer for 10 years, Jeremy Meister, who's, of course, now the singer in Chalk. Meister played guitar and did some singing. Dan Steinlicht, former guitar player for Low 12 when Les left the band. Travis Waterman, I was surprised Travis was willing to do it.
Down,
he's been a little reclusive since the band split up, but Travis is going to be in here. He was our drummer for the last six or seven. And then our original drummer, Steve Chesney, will be here, which is really cool. And, of course, can't do anything without Crazy Mike Lanham in here. So Crazy Mike will be here. Now, unfortunately, Les is not able to make it due to his work schedule. However, we're hoping that he'll be able to get freed up because I'd love to have Les Aldridge, longtime guitar player. Yeah. He was in the band the longest other than me. So definitely would love to have Les here, but we're not sure if that's going to work out. So it's going to be really cool. I'm hoping Les can make it. And speaking of Gacy, got this new poster here, CK. You saw the pictures.
Yeah, it's cool.
Oh, it's so sick, man. John Borowski has got this new movie coming out, Chris, called The John Wayne Gacy Murders.
Fuck yeah, Life and Death in Chicago.
Yeah, and it's going to be wicked as hell. It's coming out next year. John signed one for us and made it out to Murder Metal Mayhem. It says, don't look in the crawl space. I love it. So thank you, John. And if you're interested in picking up one of those posters, go to John Borowski on Facebook and order
helps the
one.
Production and shit too with the movie. Like,
yeah,
anything he does helps go towards the filming. So
that's right. That's right. So I think we've given our listeners plenty of fucking metal to chew on this week, guys. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, concrete cookies.
I agree.
Yeah, fuck yeah. So Chris, I know you've been back this episode. You've been all fired up. So what are we going to do here next, man?
We're going to get our mayhem on, boys.
All right. Well, CK, good to talk to you, bud. We'll talk to you next time, man.
Later, bro.
Talk to you guys next week.
Hey, Tom, who'd you get to hire to entertain the kids at Billy's birthday party this year?
Pogo and Friends Party Fun. It was a deal. For only $99, they sent out a clown to make the kids laugh and do all sorts of neat tricks, like put on a pair of play handcuffs to see how many kids could get out of them.
Well, that sounds like a blast.
Strange, though. They said it's for only all-boy parties. No girls allowed.
That is weird. Well, hey, I would volunteer to try on the handcuffs and give the kids a real scare.
Call 1-800-POGO-FUN today and book an all-boys birthday party. Stag films are extra, but can always be part of your party experience.
All right, a little pogo party fun there,
yes,
Chris.
Yes, sir. They always want to have a good time with the boys.
And before that, some fucking Motorhead Iron Fist. Love talking to CK all the time, but like Motorhead was a good one, man.
Yeah, like I said, it was good to hear his voice again, man.
Yeah, I'm sure. Now, we're in Mayhem. We like being in Mayhem, and I know you said that you had a little experience at the county jail for 28.
I didn't drop the soap, sir.
But you said you had a couple of little things to talk about.
Kind of funny, nothing really ridiculous. But like when I first got there, I was in what's known as J Block or whatever. It's a big open dorm and shit.
Now, were you in the new part?
Not when I first got there.
Okay.
When I first got there, I was in the old part of the jail. And like I said, it's an open dorm, bunk beds, one big open room, and there's one TV in there and everything. Well, they shut it. They fucking put you on, I guess, lockdown or whatever. It's a dorm. You don't get anything. But they turn the lights out and everything at like 10, 11, whatever time. And they'll leave the TV on in that bit. There's one TV in the open room, and this is like a 32-inch TV, something like that. And so, like, they come in, this one CO, he'd come in, he'd turn the TV off. Well, this one dude, we're all laying in our fucking bunks watching this motherfucker. This dude just come in, turn it off. As soon as the CO left the block, this dude get up, go turn it right back on. One night this shit happened like fucking five goddamn times. So the CO just says, fuck it, walks in, pulls the whole TV off of the fucking wall, sticks it under his arm, and just walks out with the motherfucker like, fuck you guys. He walks out the door. We're all just like, are you fucking serious? Did that just happen, man? Like,
wow.
Yeah, just took the whole goddamn TV. So, yeah, that was, when I first got there, like I said, I was in the old part. And then they moved me to the new part. They just walked in and it's like me and three others, like, you guys are going to go work in the kitchen. And we're like, well, what if we don't want to go work in the kitchen? They're like, well, then you lose your good time. You got to serve your whole sentence instead of half of it. So I would have done 60 days instead of 30 days.
Oh,
and I'm
damn.
Like, well, it looks like I'm going to work in the kitchen because I'm getting out of here as soon as I can.
Yeah, right.
Well, mind you, when you're not in the kitchen pod, in the workers pod, you're counting days. I got this many days left. I got 6 days left or 15 days left, whatever. Well, when you move to the workers pod, you go to work. When you get done working every day, you get strip searched. So you quit counting by days. You count, you start counting when you get out by how many more squatting coughs you got to do.
Like, oh, nice.
Yeah, open your mouth, raise your arm, lift your nuts, turn around, squat and cough. It was straight up like, yep, I got six more squatting coughs and I'm out of this bitch. And we'd all just talk shit too, fucking like, because they take one at a time into a room, do the strip search in the side room, and we're all talking shit like, well, this motherfucker's the one looking at all of our fucking assholes and shit. Like,
right.
We just make fun of it. It's just funny. But yeah, when you count it down, it's squat and cough.
Yeah, we used to call in the army when I went into basic training, where they have to do something similar to that before they send you out to go to wherever you're going to go do your basic.
Right.
And we used to call the doctor Old Squinty because he had to look at everybody's butthole.
Old Squinty. I'm straight up like, dude, I'm going to make my asshole wink at this dude one day.
That's funny. So was the food awful or was it all right?
I mean, it was jail food. I've had better. Right. I've had better.
Yeah, because I know with the day job, when I've had to work in prisons before, like the first time I did it, the food was pretty decent. The last time I did it, it was fucking awful.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That was many years ago. So, and that was a prison, not a jail. But
now
I'm just curious.
You, working in the kitchen was a plus because got better food and more food. So
that's cool.
Because like, we could cook other shit other than what everything else because we worked there.
Right, right.
But it was all good.
That's cool. Any other things you wanted to share about that experience?
Nothing I can think of offhand. Dude, seriously, it was some of the most boring shit in the world, man.
Oh, yeah. I can't even imagine, dude.
Like, for real, some of the most boring shit in the world.
Yeah. I'm sure time goes really slow when you're just sitting there like that.
Like I said, I was happy to go to the workers' pod and the kit because
I'm sure
it did make the days go by a lot faster.
Oh, yeah. Big time. A little update on the Murder Metal Mayhem book, the coffee table book that should be nowhere near a coffee table. Hoping to get the advanced orders going. Here's the holdup with the advanced orders. In order for us to know how much each copy is going to cost us to print, we have to have everything finished. It's just kind of the way the system is set up with Amazon. So Jenny... my fiance has been setting up the manuscript in Publisher, and the cover art done by Dathan Engel, he did it, the front and the cover separate. We need them together, and then they're going to put the barcode and all that stuff on. So everything's got to be just right to pass through the checks and balances that Amazon has set up. So I can't determine the cost of the book until everything is completely done. And we're about 95% there. So hang in there.
Awesome, dude. You guys got so much done while I was going, dude.
Yeah, it looks really good. Lots of pictures. You saw those, Chris.
Oh, yeah, lots of pictures. I was like,
the first time we met. The first time we met to talk about the podcast.
Yeah.
And the first time we met,
you got pictures of that? Jesus Christ.
No, not that. But the first time we met about the podcast in 2017. And then doing the first podcast, building the studio, our live events that we've done, a lot of cool pictures.
A few guests we've had inside here.
Yeah, Joey Cashman, fucking CK. It's just really, really cool to look back at that because, you know, we're on episode 79 right now, which is, you know, kind of crazy to think we're closing in on number 100. So,
oh, yeah, man.
So the book is just about there. We appreciate your patience. As soon as we have the price point where we know how much we can charge to be able to recoup the costs, we'll have the advanced order set up. So you'll be able to get these things. They kick ass. We got word searches in there for each section. So murder, metal, and mayhem, all with their separate word search. Got a crossword puzzle. Got a contest. You got to pick or you got to count how many black and curlies there are on a plate of food. Yeah. It's pretty fucked up. And if you win that.
Lots of coloring.
coloring. Ricky Casso.
Dude, that goddamn Matheny, dude. Joe Matheny. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Awesome, we're definitely going to have to do something with that Matheny picture. That would be a good shirt.
Matheny's fucking great.
So it's really good. Dathan did a really great job with the artwork. And each one of us, me, you, and CK, wrote our own sections. And murder, metal, and mayhem. I did an intro and outro.
I didn't even write essays for school. What the fuck?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we got you all a published author here. So that's going to be really cool. And so we'll keep you guys posted. Now, we did an interview with our buddies who mentioned this, the Black Crypt podcast, a great podcast based here in Illinois. Really good guys. We met them last year, Chris, at the Dark History Convention.
I had a good time with them last year, too.
We did, and we interviewed them, and then they did some stuff with one of my stories. They do readings of horror stories, and they did Man with Spots on their show. They've been very complimenting of us, and we of them, so it's a great working relationship, really cool guys. And so we thought you guys would like to hear this interview we did with them. It's about 7 minutes long. So check it out. Us talking with the Black Crypt podcast. All right, we're here at the Dark History and Horror Convention 2019. Murder, Metal, Mayhem here next to our friends at the Black Crypt podcast. And we had a little podcast mashup yesterday.
Yeah,
up
fun,
on
dude.
Stage.
It was
talking
to
Amityville
really
Horror.
It
was fun.
You did.
Had a little audio drama. Always good to have a little of that.
We have more of that today as well.
I saw that. I saw it. It was nice not having to worry about it.
It was BS.
But it's cool to have you guys here. Shannon and Tucker
right here.
Alex is at a wedding or something.
Yeah,
right?
He left us. He abandoned us like usual.
He probably just hung over still.
Yeah, he said he was hung over this morning.
Yes.
So you guys have been here, and it's you guys do, of course, a podcast. You guys do more than true crime. You guys do horror, and you read one of my stories on one of your shows.
I was going to say that. I listened. I really like the way you guys did the story, the Man with Spots, the sound effects you guys added to it, the voice.
Yeah, it's really cool.
The way you guys put that together was freaking phenomenal.
We loved the story. I mean, honestly, I read your whole book, and the whole book was great.
Thank you.
But that's the one we chose because we thought that it would probably do best like on an audio drama type platform. So
yeah.
We'll do one of your stories anytime. You know?
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And you guys are based in where the Champaign, Urbana area?
Right. Yep. Okay. We record the podcast in Danville, Illinois.
I thought so.
We live, all three of us, here in Central Illinois. So.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
And when did you guys start doing the Black Crypt podcast?
About a year ago, April, right? April of 18. So we've been at about a year and a half now.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. About
which was the same time. Yeah, we started in April of 18. Okay, that's awesome. Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. I didn't realize that we had both started it at basically the same time. And last year, I remember when we met, we were both kind of working through the kinks of it.
Yeah.
I remember I was looking at your mixer, like, because I was, you know, just genuinely curious, what do other podcasters do? Because there is no, at least that I'm aware of, you know, like a book on how to do a podcast.
No.
You know, there's all this random shit you can look at, and everybody, of course, has their own take on it. But what did you guys, what made you guys decide to start doing a podcast?
Well, it all started one night. We were hanging out at Alex's house, and we were talking, and Tucker said that he always wanted to do something along the lines of a horror podcast, because everybody in the room liked horror, just
right.
games, movies, all of that, and we wanted to do some sort of little project. And then after that, we decided, you know what, let's look into it. We looked for a name. We already had a little bit of an idea what to do when myself and Alex did a micro podcast for high school as like a project.
Oh, okay.
And so I had an idea and was familiar with Audacity, and then we decided to roll with the Black Grit podcast, and it slowly became what it is today.
Yeah.
It all started as just an idea.
We basically usually say that we talk about anything horror, and in the early days, it was primarily story-based, where, you know, we would do fictional stories and everything, but then we quickly realized that if I'm the only one writing stories for the podcast, they run dry.
Right.
Hard to, for a bi-weekly show, it's hard to have a new full-length short story done every 2 weeks. So we finally kind of, we're in our third season now, and finally caught our stride. So our basic layout is every about 15 minutes at the beginning of each episode, we'll do horror news, where we'll talk about kind of what's coming up or what we've been watching in the horror industry.
Right.
And then after that, we pick a topic and we run with it, whether it's unexplained phenomenon, a famous haunting, or something along those lines. We also have done kind of like archetypes of the horror. So we'll talk about, like, we did a whole episode on killer dolls, or we'll talk about, like, the final girl, or like the jock, and like the, you know, just the archetypes that you see in every single horror film.
Right.
So
right.
We talk about anything and everything.
That's cool. And you guys drink during the podcast too, right?
I don't.
Oh yeah, you should see the collection of. Yeah.
Well, this guy drinks probably
studio.
With the three of you drink in an episode.
I guarantee you, because we learned about a year ago that we can have a couple of beers while we're doing the podcast, but if we try and overdo it, the quality just goes to shit.
Yeah.
So
well, we found that out with him when it comes to whiskey.
Yeah.
The beer is fine, but once the whiskey comes out, that's when the shit goes south.
Ask Alex about his whiskey recording.
The one episode I was drinking whiskey, you could hear throughout the episode.
Yeah, it degrades as the minutes go on. It's like, oh my God. You
know?
Yeah.
We had our buddy Cashman in there that day, and these guys are both looking at each other while we're recording, like, dude, do you see this motherfucker, man?
We took about a 10-minute break to Alex to go to the bathroom, and then he just didn't come back out.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, he just fell asleep, and that
was
fine.
That's funny. Well, we've been talking since we've been here this weekend, and we're going to do some things together.
Yeah.
You guys are going to come to our studio, and we're going to come to do one with
we'd
you, because you're building one now, right,
Alex? Yeah.
Building one in his garage, so we've done that at my garage in Horns Eye Studios, which looks like 20 people were murdered in there with a circular saw. So
it's pretty brutal.
Nice.
It's very wicked, and I bought the exorcism box from Spooked TV.
Oh yeah, I saw that over there earlier.
I've got it. So that'll be in the studio.
Nice.
So just love to add stuff to it and creepy shit, and perfectly suited for what you guys
do. We got one of those pogo masks hanging up in the studio.
Yeah, right, nice.
Yeah, and an Ed Gein one too. So.
Very good.
But yeah, so that'll be fun, and always look forward to doing things with you guys.
We look forward to working with you.
And I'd like to do more. You know, I know that it's easy to say, and we get caught up in our lives, but definitely want to do some stuff with you guys.
For sure.
It's a lot of fun.
And you know, the small town podcasts like this, you got to stick together a little bit, because we're not out there making a living doing it.
No. And if even one of us kind of quote-unquote makes it, it might help the others kind of further things along.
100%.
So who knows, you know?
Just like underground metal.
That's right.
Like
that's
literally.
Right. Totally.
Family, man.
Yeah, that's where I come from, is the underground metal scene, and that's the only way it can stay alive, is people helping each other out.
100%.
That's really cool, and and all the exhibitors here, I mean, people we've met these couple of years we've done these, it's some pretty cool people, good connections and friendships. Yeah. And
you know, it was good to see some of the same people back, too.
I agree. You
know, it was good.
I agree. Donnie over at Killer Culture, dude. Yeah. For sure, dude.
Well, so thanks, guys.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
If you would...
All right, very cool to talk to those guys.
Oh, yeah, dude.
And we hope to do more with them. I know we talked about doing this before, and it's just easy to get caught up in your busy life and shit going on. But
like you had mentioned, that they're a three-piece podcast, like you said, like you was saying. That was Shannon and Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
Alex, though, he was there the day before, and we were sitting there. We were side-by-side booths, and I was like, you know what? All right. And I got my cooler with my beer sitting there. And he pulls out a bottle. He's like, "You want some Jameson?" I was like, "You know I do."
your blood brother.
Right, right. I was like, "Why would I not want Jameson, bro?" A
little better than McCormick. Huh? Yeah.
I mean, depends on your white trash perspective.
So yeah, definitely check out the Black Crypt podcast. And we're going to do, we referenced it in that interview, the live podcast we did with them at the convention with the Amityville Horror. And we're going to use that live podcast coming up in the next couple months
as a bonus.
So we think you guys will dig that. Check those guys out, though. They got a good show. Now, I've been making some good progress on the Deeper Than Dead project I've been working on with artist Brian Usual. For those of you that don't know, there is a story in my new collection of short stories, Creation of Chaos 2, and the story is called Deeper Than Dead, but it's actually part one of the story. The whole story is going to be called Deeper Than Dead, but it's going to have 10 parts. Each part will have a full-size color art piece to go with it, so it's going to be an illustrated novel. Brian and I are working on it right now. I just wrapping up part four, so I'm making good progress. Four parts done, six to go. Plan is for me to have all the writing completely done, edited, and finished by April, and we're going to be hopefully lining up a publicist for this release. So we're going to really try to make a go of it and get some serious promotion lined up for it. It's really cool. Brian, one of the pieces, art pieces he's going to do, part of the story revolves around these very strange clocks that are found in the cell down deeper than dead. And the guy in the cell doesn't know what the clocks are for. Because they don't move like a normal clock. And so I'm not going to reveal what the purpose of the clocks is. But Brian, in order to draw this clock, he's going to make one, like a model of it. It's going to be really cool.
Really?
Yeah. And then we're going
to... That's fucking cool as fuck, it is. Bro.
And then when we do appearances... for this, he's going to bring the model with him and stuff, which would be really cool on the table. So that'll be cool. Brian is like 6'3 or 6'4. So it'll be funny if we have him at events because you and I are about the same height and he's going to be like towering over us. Like
looking up at him like, hey, bro, how's it going?
But it's going to be cool. And so really excited about this. There'll be more information as we go. But working on a Facebook page for it and getting people kind of a central location where they could find out what's up. I've been posting some excerpts from the other parts as I've been writing them, little pieces here and there on my author page on Facebook. So if you dig that sort of thing, hook me or look me up on Facebook, Pete Altieri, author, and you can find out more about that. By going there and getting all the updates and stuff from me on Facebook. So, all right. So I'm very excited about that project. I'm also very excited. Chris, finally you're back, and we're going to do a Killer Cage match. So,
Killer Cage match.
Killer Cage match. And you know what?
Ding.
I didn't tell you about this. Ding. I don't think I did. I started getting a little concerned because I have heard, now I'm not trying to say that people are ripping us off, okay?
Okay.
But all I'm going to say is there have been a few very high profile podcasters that have been doing little things like we've been doing.
No shit.
Yes. There was a podcast, Dan Cummins, Time Suck, I think it was him, that did Jesperson just recently.
Oh, yeah, I remember hearing that, yeah.
He did Jesperson and Kemper in a fucking death match, yeah. And I was just like, oh, what the fuck? We just did that.
I remember hearing that.
Now, we all know celebrity death match. That's where I got the original idea from, is that, right, you know? Right. So I'm not trying to say, like, I got a corner on the market of this, but
right.
It is kind of funny because we've had a few of them. The guys on last podcast on the left did one with Belle Gunness and Warnos, or Catherine Knight, that's it. And we had done the same thing, and they refer to it as a cage. I mean, it's oddly right. similar. So what I have done, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it yet, because I own a lot of domains, and I don't necessarily use them. I just own them. I own now killercagematch.com. So
that's fucking great.
So if we decide to really run with Killer Cage Match for whatever reason, it's ours. We don't have to worry about somebody stealing
that's
it. So
we own
I
it.
Own that.
Pete's like, that's mine.
Killer
bitch.
Cage Match. So they can do whatever they want, but they can't call it a Killer Cage Match. So
that's good.
So we own that now. So all right. So we got a cage match. Thanks again to listeners Stacy Dudley, Barb Martin, and Tony Campagna. And Chris, who do we got going at it this week, man?
Bin Laden. Osama Bin Laden. And Vlad the Impaler. Gonna go
nice.
Fight.
Vlad know. Dracula.
Yeah.
The Impaler yeah. King. Fighting to the death in a cage. And they got two objects, Chris. Yeah, what do they got
totally
going on?
They don't fit each other. Like they, like one's worse in one way and one's worse in the other way. We got ourselves a chainsaw.
That could make things interesting.
And a rubber boot filled with diarrhea.
Ah, yeah. Damn.
That's how you get the pink eye.
Yeah. Get a whole lot of pink eye with that. A whole lot of pink eye. God, all fucking mighty. Now, the variable this time is pretty good, Chris. What do we got going on with the variable?
Jesus Christ. We got two lot lizards with urinary tract infections, that's UTI, fighting over a handful of Vicodin.
So two lot lizards with urinary tract infections fighting over a handful of Vicodin in a cage with Osama bin Laden and Vlad the Impaler with a chainsaw and a rubber boot filled with diarrhea. So lot to take in there.
That's a whole fucking lot to take in. Like,
what do you think? I mean, you brought it up in the beginning when we talked about this in the intro. I mean, it's a mismatch physically, because Osama's like this frail fucking right. goat herder.
Had everybody do his stuff for him, which Vlad had a lot of people doing shit for him too. But
he did.
He would physically
right.
violently kill you as well.
Yeah, and Vlad was from the medieval times,
exactly.
You know, pretty fucking like Game of Thrones shit going on.
So Vlad's going to look at these lot lizards with UTIs and be like, oh. I'm from medieval times. I know about UTIs. We all got UTI. Like, we got that ain't even the worst of our health problems.
So you don't think Vlad's going to care too much about the lot lizards?
He don't give a shit. He's going to cut their
is
fucking
he gonna
heads.
Is he going to impale them, though?
He's going to impale them. He will impale them.
He'll impale them in their diseased cooch?
Yes. Didn't they all do that? It was the medieval times. Everybody was diseased in their cooch.
That's true. And so I think the lot lizards are kind of off the table here. Is not really.
And I'm wondering. Well, the rubber boot. I'm wondering if it's honestly one of the lot lizards' boot.
Oh wow!
She's just all fucked up and like I
pooped
shit.
In her boot.
Like fuck it, pooping in this.
Now, if Osama gets a hold of the chainsaw, though, that could
problems.
Get kind of interesting,
exactly.
man.
There will be a problem because they...
I mean, a chainsaw is going to fuck you up. I mean, I don't care how tough you are, man.
The fucking cartels cutting people's heads off with chainsaws. It's pretty fucked up, man.
Right.
So if he got a hold of that and he was able to get it, Vlad, he's going to have a problem, Vlad is. So,
yeah, I think that is going to be the game changer is
yeah,
who gets a hold of the
chainsaw.
Chainsaw.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a problem. But And those are the only fucking weapons they get too. Yeah, whoever gets the chainsaw.
Now, let's say you get a hold of the rubber boot and you fucking splash up some diarrhea in somebody's face. I mean, if you did that and you grabbed the chainsaw,
right.
You're like all fucked up with diarrhea in your eyes and
shit. This dude's coming at me with a chainsaw. I'm like, stop, motherfucker. You don't got shit in my eyes, man. Fuck.
I don't want to get pink eye, motherfucker.
Right? As far as the winning of the fight, the lot lizards, they're going to fight. Whoever gets the Vicodin in is just going to run off and sell it for crack anyway. Yeah, man, that's... Whoever gets the chainsaw, honestly. But I'm going to go with Vlad because he's more overpowering.
I think so, too.
I'm going with Vlad.
I think so, too. As much as we were joking about that, you know, I don't see Vlad being overtaken by Osama.
No, not at all.
No, he's a pretty frail fucking dude.
Every time I think
dude.
Of Osama bin Laden, I just think of the South Park drawing of him and shit. And I'm just like, right. I can see that. Yeah, he's... stupid.
All right, well, I think we're both in agreement here. Vlad the Impaler's winning this match.
Shit, yeah.
So you guys comment, let us know what you think. We always love doing these. I know you guys do too. So Chris, I think we did some good mayhem tonight.
Not too
so
bad, man. Don't forget to squat and cough when you leave tonight, boys and girls.
That's right, that's right. So let's hit that outro. Fucking Dust Bowl, man. The song Bowl. Dead Inside. Those guys are kick ass. Got to see them live a couple years ago, opening up for Exodus and Obituary, I think it was. Oh my God. Really good.
Heavy metal mashup, Dust Bowl Thrower.
Nice. So good stuff. Been a good episode, man. Great to have you back.
Oh, yeah, man.
And I'm sure you're glad to be the fuck out of where you were. That's
fucking
for sure.
Fucking right I am, brother. Hell yeah.
Bumper music tonight by Motorhead, Dust Bowl, and Chrysix. And speaking of Chrysix, CK's
intro shit. Hell yeah, that music.
Yep.
That great.
Great metal motherfucker, man.
Motherfucker.
I need to try to see if I can get a hold of those guys, see if they want to do an interview. I wonder if they even have any idea that we're using that. Hopefully they wouldn't be like, stop using it. Then we'd have to change it. So,
right. Yeah, that would fucking suck.
I doubt it, though. Most underground bands are all about it, you know.
Right.
The Murder Metal Mayhem music, of course, the intro music by Low 12. Check out Spellbound Effects and Art for their incredible online catalog of silicone body parts, hands, feet, dicks, whatever you
for
desire.
Real dicks.
For real, yeah.
You get yourself, get your lady a gory dildo.
Tony has amazing Ed Gein inspired stuff like human skin lamps, which I can't even wait to get this shit. Right. I posted a picture on our Facebook page, and the day this episode comes out is the day that the lamp will arrive here, Thursday. Yeah. I can't wait to get this fucking light or this lamp. And Tony is also making us our nipple belt that we're going to have for the studio, but he's not done with it yet. But he wanted to get the lamp out because we got a couple of big episodes coming up. The Low 12
like
one I want to videotape, so I told him we need to have it for that.
Yeah, definitely.
So that was great that Tony was able to get that out. So go support him at spellboundfxandart.com. Also, book your own ghost tour, seance, or take the Jeffrey Dahmer Cream City Cannibal Tour at Shaker's Cigar Bar. Chris, we love that place
yes,
up there in Milwaukee. Most haunted bar in the United States, hangmantours.com.
Yeah.
Book a tour, man. Go see Bob and eat some good food.
See if you can move the safe, because it moves, but I don't think you're going to move it.
No, I don't think so either. And if you really got the balls like we did, stay in the Dead Hooker suite all night.
Yeah.
I stayed up there by myself one night.
Right.
And then I've been there twice after that with you guys, with the group, and it's a lot of fun, man.
You know how the basement's supposed to be the most haunted part. When we was
you were down there for hours.
Yeah,
man.
We was just there. Me, my brother Cashman, and my cousin were down there like
come on.
Right? Something happened. So I mean,
it's very eerie and ominous. Don't get me wrong. I can see some shit fucking happening down
here. Oh, yeah. definitely check out our friends at PsychoKillerBobbleheads.com. Get yourself one of their awesome bobbleheads or a t-shirt. Tell them Murder Metal Mayhem sent you. They'll get your order out right away. Thanks to everybody out there listening. We do appreciate it. We continue to dominate to see... you know, and see how many of you are getting your murder on every week. It just keeps us wanting to do this.
Yes, sir.
Makes it a lot of fun because it is a lot of work putting these together and having to get out after a day, you know, both of us working day jobs, having to do this at night. It makes for a long day. And we do enjoy it, but knowing that you guys are out there checking it out makes it a lot more fun. Yeah.
If nobody was listening, I ain't going to fucking do this for nobody to hear.
Well,
right?
Of course. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
So, Chris, what's the first one there, dude?
Oh, Lori Baker, 666, says, nice. I really like that interview with Tony Campagna. Yep. Sounds like a cool guy to party with and talk to about horror. And I'm glad you listened to his interview, because if you heard about the bodies up in his yard along the freaking goddamn
the canal
and shit, I bet he's a great guy to hang out. I want to drink with him.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, Tony's a great dude. And so, Lori, we're glad that you dug that interview with him. Rhoda Bega 217 commented, I can't wait to hear your episode on BTK. That's going to be awesome. Now, normally we don't tip the cap on episodes coming up other than the next one. Right. But I did mention it a couple weeks ago that our year-end blowout is going to be BTK. That's going to be sick. Did that interview with Dr. Catherine Ramsland, who wrote a book about BTK, visited him, talked to him on the phone for 5 years. She did this investigative work. And had a code that she talked with BTK using this code.
Really?
Pretty fucking, yeah. He like demanded that she talk to him through a code. It was very fucking weird.
The dude was fucking weird anyway.
He has really gotten even stranger in prison. So
I can only imagine.
Definitely, I think everybody's going to like this episode. It's going to be very, very cool. Right. So.
And then Rob Henderson Rocks says, the metal segment is my favorite. Loved what CK did with Agnostic Front. Love that shit. And he does a pretty good job about all of it. Glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, I mean, he did that Agnostic Front episode a couple weeks ago and Hardcore, New York Hardcore. But it was cool, of course. Always, always good to hear what CK's got to say. And then Meredith the Destroyer commented, I've been listening to you guys since June, and the podcast keeps getting better. I've been telling everyone I can about it. So fuck yeah, Meredith. Thank you very much.
Fuck yeah, thank you.
That's really cool that you're turning people onto it. We've had people, you know, say that they have like a party every Thursday and they get people together at midnight to listen to the new show. I mean, that's pretty awesome to just think people would like what we do enough to sit there and do that. That's just very, very humbling. So thank you guys, all of you. We really do appreciate that.
100%.
Don't forget to check out MurderMetalMayhem.com to listen to all the episodes and bonus content. Also, go check out the Murder Metal Mayhem YouTube channel. We're going to be doing more stuff on YouTube.
Now that I'm a free man.
That's right. I've got a couple ideas for some funny commercials. We're also going to videotape the Low 12 episode next month. So there'll be some stuff on there. So hang tight if you've been waiting. It's just hard to do all of this stuff at once with everything going on.
Right. Life happens.
Yeah. Follow us on Twitter at Get Your Murder On and like us on Facebook. Join the 666 Club. Support the podcast by being a patron and go to patreon.com/murdermetalmayhem. It's just $3 a month, and we do appreciate the support. You go to creationofchaos.com if you want to pick up one of my books. I've got a brand new book out now, Creation of Chaos Volume 2, 12 Ways to Make You Die, artwork by Joey Gormonger. So he did a really great job with that.
Fuck yeah, he did.
Don't miss next week. We'll be doing a very special feature on the cult leader David Koresh. Chris, they definitely don't want to miss this, man. That interview with David Thibodeau.
Definitely not.
Man, that was good.
And he wasn't, Koresh wasn't the bad guy people thought he was when that shit happened either. It just, people didn't understand.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story because I listened to Dan Cummins' podcast, The Time Suck, on Koresh, and he has a different take on it.
Yeah.
So I think that podcast that we do is going to kind of paint both sides
and let
people decide, because David Thibodeau made it seem like he wasn't quite what, you know, everybody made him out to be.
Yeah, and I've read and heard other things that like support the same thing Thibodeau was saying, like he wasn't actually what people thought he was. Like trying to fucking take over the world, not take over the world, but just because he had guns, they wanted to come get him.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, the issues with him with the minors, that's definitely an issue with, you know, young girls. You know, so there's definitely both sides to it.
Miners like coal miners.
Oh.
Like, so he's digging for gold. So what?
Duh. So, yeah, you don't want to miss that one next week. That'll be episode 80. So,
fucking A, man.
Can't let him go, though, without hearing a new karaoke song. I went a little hair metal on this one, if you want to call it metal. But back in the 80s. This one inspired by Samuel Little and his thing for painting pictures of his victims. So check it out. And until next time, keep one foot in the gutter.
And your fist choking up prostitutes for over a quarter of a fucking decade.
Every time I dream, on every page, every magazine, so wild and free, so far from me, you're all I want, my fantasy. Oh, look what you've done to this rock and roll blues. Oh, look what you've done. Put your hurt on me if you dare. Such a woman, you got style. You make every man feel like a child. Ow! You got some kind of hold on me. You're all wrapped up in mystery. So wild and free, so far from me. You're all I want, my fantasy. What you've done to this rock and roll blues. Oh, look what you've done.